It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Face of Feminism, a conversation with NCAA and University of Kentucky Wildcat swimming star Riley Gaines. It's the Will Cain podcast on Fox News Podcast. What's up and welcome to the weekend. Welcome to Friday. As always, I hope you will download, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your audio entertainment, at Apple, Spotify, or at Fox News Podcast. You know, Riley Gaines was fast. Her bio reads that she was All-SEC freshman team in 2019. She made All-SEC second team in 2020. She participated in the 2021 NCAA Swimming and Diving Championships, coming second in the 4x200 relay and seventh in the 200 free. In 2022, she placed fifth in the 200-yard NCAA Freestyle Championship. In that race, reads Wikipedia, she tied University of Pennsylvania swimmer Leah Thomas. Now, Leah Thomas is, of course, the face of controversy. Former Will Thomas, the trans athlete male who entered women's swimming and upset, as you'll hear in this conversation, objective reality. But while Leah Thomas is the face of controversy, Riley Gaines has gone on to become the face of modern feminism, and she was fast. One of my producers sent me this. Riley's times look like they're the following. Riley can tell me in a follow-up to this conversation where I got any of this wrong. She swam a 21.5 in the 50 free. Your host here, your boy, I think I got a 21 at one point. I was, of course, a high school swimmer, a college walk-on water polo player at Pepperdine. I think I got a 21. I'm not sure that's in the Sherman Bearcat record books. I have a feeling it reads 22. So maybe I got a 21 like on a relay off a rolling start. She holds her personal record of a 48.2 in the 100 freestyle. Nope. Never got a 48. May have got a 49. Feel confident I got a 50. She also swam the 100 fly, 51.39. Fast. I bring up the 100 fly because I swam the 100 fly. Nope. Not a 51. I don't know. Again, it's been like, what, 20 years? No, 30 years. I think I got a 53, maybe, in the 100 fly. Riley Gaines was fast. I found this conversation with her today, not just to be a reflection on what a quality swimmer Riley Gaines was and is, but also just how incredibly smart and, more importantly, wise she is as she reflects on her time competing against Leah Thomas, and now that she stepped into the world of political activism and raising a flag, shining a light on this truly modern day injustice of men invading women's sports, but more importantly, what it means for us as a society as we deny objective truth. I think you're going to enjoy this conversation with Riley Gaines. Riley Gaines, as she has been described, the new face of feminism. What is going on? Why are you on the side of the road?
My life this past year, but really these past few weeks, I have been doing absolutely everything I can to get in front of anyone who will listen to me. So I actually live in Nashville. So I just came back from the Daily Wire, and now I'm going to Outkick, which both are stationed in Nashville. And because of timing, I am on the side of the road, which is so indicative of exactly what I've been doing this past year.
Riley, why are you, so as you pointed out, for the past year, but increasingly over the past month, you said you are passionate about getting your voice and your point of view represented out there. Why is it something that you are so passionate about? Talking about trans issues in women's sports, you know, why is this the thing that you have said, at least for the time being, this is the focus of my life?
It's interesting because a year ago, I never, ever would have thought this is where I would be. I was set to go to dental school this year. I got married. I was ready to ride off into the sunset, essentially. And I very easily could have. But being in the position that I was in last year, having to compete against a male at the fastest meet in the world, I was a swimmer. It's at our NCAA championships. It's the fastest meet in the world. It's faster than the Olympics, of course. It's short course. It's a really big deal. But we were forced to compete against a man. And I saw how blatantly wrong that was, how blatantly unfair, but not just the competition, the locker room, the silencing that the universities were trying to do. And now I've taken a step back and I've seen the bigger picture of how they're asking us to deny objective truth, which is scary. That's a scary thought when that's the norm, denying essentially the sheer essence of humanity, man versus woman. They want us to deny that. And so I see what's at stake here. And really fighting for that next generation. I have a younger sister and she's the Tennessee state champion in gymnastics. Like I mentioned, I just got married and I can only hope one day that I have a daughter. And I can't imagine being in the position that I'm in, having the testimony that I have and the platform that I have, and not using that to fight for that next generation.
So I want to lay a little groundwork by satisfying some of my curiosity. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions that really, I don't know that they are of any consequence, but I don't care. I'm curious.
Totally.
You were on Fox and Friends a few weeks ago and you were with your husband. And after you went off air, can I tell you what the debate was in the studio? What kind of accent is that of your husband? Like, I think we settled on New Zealand. Where is he from?
He's from England. So you're wrong. Oh. But like I mentioned, I'm from Tennessee. I'm right here in Nashville. And so he's halfway across the Atlantic. He's got some Southern twang now, and I take full credit for that.
Okay. You swam against Leah. And listen, I was, I swam my entire life from age, I don't know, 6 to 18. I walked onto a water polo team in California at Pepperdine University in college. My wife was a collegiate swimmer. So this is a sport that is very near and dear to my heart and been a big part of my life. But you know what's funny is I don't remember what event it was for you or for Leah. Was it, I'm going to assume, 100 free, 50 free, maybe fly? What event was your event?
I swam. The race Leah and I raced was the 200 freestyle.
Okay. And did you swim in general? What you said sprint freestyle was, I think you focused in on you, that for you. What else did you swim in addition to the 200 free?
The 200 butterfly. I'm actually the SEC record holder, one of the fastest Americans of all time in the 200 butterfly. So that kind of came out of nowhere my senior year. That was the first time I was allowed to do it. So surprised myself there. I qualified for the Olympic trials in all freestyle events and butterfly. So those were my two things.
You happened into the 200 fly as a senior. I mean, that's like saying,
how unfortunate
is
that?
I was, you know, running. It's a terrible curse. It's like I was running 100 meter dashes and somebody said, hey, try this marathon out. I never went beyond 100 fly. Hated going beyond. Hated actually the last 25 of 100 fly. So much respect for the 200 fly. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Leah. So it was the 200 free where you raced Leah. When did it first hit your radar? Hey, this man was racing on the woman's side of our sport.
About midway through my senior year. So our NCAA championships is in March. I didn't even know who Leah Thomas, I'd never heard of that name until about November of the year prior. All of a sudden, again, I had made it my goal to win a national title. So I was competing for that top spot. But all of a sudden, this person who is ranked above me by multiple seconds, which, you know, in swimming, seconds is a lot, especially to be trailing everyone else in the country by multiple seconds. That's a rarity, to say the least. And so this person is ranked above me and I'd never heard of them. So there were a couple red flags. One of which, this is I'll say girl, because at the time I really thought this was a girl. This girl was ranked first in the 100 freestyle and all the freestyle events in between until the mile. And so just as you mentioned, this is like, if you think of Olympic runners, this is like your best 200 meter runner being your best marathon runner. It's a totally different skill set, systems you're using. And so that was a red flag. This person was from University of Pennsylvania, which was a red flag. Lots of it wasn't really making sense until a few days later, an article came out that disclosed very briefly in a blip of a sentence, as if we were supposed to just breeze right by it. Leah Thomas is formerly Will Thomas and swam 3 years on the men's team at University of Pennsylvania before deciding to transition to the women's team. And so my coach sent me the link. He said, you need to look at this, because he knew my goals. He knew what I wanted to achieve. And so I read this and I read it again. And I was, of course, shocked. But truthfully, I felt this sense of relief because I was able to look up who Will Thomas was out of curiosity. You know, was this a person who went from ranking first to now continuing to rank first, which is, of course, not what we saw. This was a mediocre male at best, ranking 462nd in the nation prior to now again trailing every other woman in the country by body lengths. And so I thought, I say I felt relief because I thought the NCAA would see it exactly how I saw it. Nothing opinionated, nothing hateful, just the sheer facts of it. But that is not how the NCAA saw it. They saw absolutely nothing wrong with allowing Leah to compete with us at our national championships last year.
Outside of the NCAA, what was the reaction? You know, I think in the original, when the story first came out, a lot of people talked about the fact that there seemed to be silence in the beginning from both Leah's teammates and from the swimming community at large, including, I think, for most part, parents. I think a lot of people understood why. They understood why. I think everyone immediately, intuitively understood the consequences, understood the stakes and the potential ostracization. But I wonder, what was the conversation like with you and your teammates, with your parents, with other parents? What was the quiet conversation, or was there none, in the swimming community?
I can tell you from my own personal experience at that meet, I can wholeheartedly attest to the tears that I saw from the 9th and 17th place finishers who missed out on being named an All-American by one place. And I can wholeheartedly attest to the extreme discomfort we all felt in that locker room. And I can wholeheartedly attest to the whispers and the grumbles of anger and frustration from these girls who, just like myself, had dedicated our entire lives to get to that meet. But that's what they were whispers. We talked amongst ourselves, we talked to our coaches, and we discreetly talked to our parents. But I don't know if it was the social pressure keeping us silent for so long, keeping us scared. We were terrified, especially talking to Leah Thomas's teammates. What they went through on a daily basis is truly, I mean, it's chilling. They were forced every week to go to mandatory LGBTQ education meetings to learn about how just by being cisgender, they were oppressing Leah Thomas. When they sent an email to their administration expressing their discomfort in the locker room, and I swear I have a screenshot of their response, their administration responded back with, "If you feel uncomfortable seeing male genitalia, here are some counseling resources that you should seek." When their school told them, if you can't take a stance because we've already taken your stance for you, they were told, you know, you'll never get into grad school, you'll lose your job, you'll lose all your friends, you won't be able to have a scholarship. So these girls, to be totally frank with you, they were gaslit into silence. They were thought to be wrong for feeling uncomfortable in that locker room. And they see what happens to me when I go to San Francisco State University and speak, and they don't want that for themselves. They don't want to be called names, which, truthfully, at this point, to be called transphobic, it's almost a term of endearment because it means you're someone who is willing to acknowledge the truth. But they're scared. Parents, too. Parents who work corporate jobs. They don't want to ruffle feathers or step on toes because I have so many parents, coaches, athletic directors who message me and say, you know, I agree with you. Keep fighting. I just can't say so publicly because I'm the breadwinner in my family and I can't lose my job. But the silence has gotten to the point where it's deafening.
We're going to step aside here for a moment. Stay tuned.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
So there's so much that you just laid out that I want to follow up on. I really appreciate how you keep coming back to your message of objective truth, because I share that passion. It's like this issue is important, but the truth of the matter is look, as I mentioned, my wife was a collegiate swimmer, and anybody that's dedicated a good portion of their life to being good at something and to have it taken away by fundamental unfairness understands that price you're paying as a society. But the price we're paying at a higher level is the denial of objective
truth.
Absolutely. Because if we do that, game on. I mean, there's nothing safe. There's no objective reality, in which case there's no principle, there's no law, there's no nothing. But I love how you keep coming back to that message. Let me stick with the locker room. You talk about Leah's teammates, and I think that's a really good reminder of what they dealt with on an ongoing basis. But you at least experienced it in one meet. And I think I've heard you talk about this more recently. What was that? What happened in the locker room? Like, was it that Leah I don't know. I wasn't there. Is it? Did Leah have his own changing area? Was he right there at the lockers with the rest of you? Was he in the same? I don't know what it is. When I was playing water polo at Pepperdine, the men have a communal shower. I'm just curious, what kind of intimacy was forced for all of you ladies in this one man?
So I'll kind of set the scene here of what you know, but for the people listening, a swimming locker room is not a place of modesty. This is a place where, I mean, these suits you put on, it takes about 15 minutes to put these suits on, 15 minutes of which you're fully exposed. And I say that because we were forced to share a locker room with a male who was fully intact with an exposing male genitalia, watching other women undress. And I also want to mention, we were not forewarned we would be sharing this changing space. There was no asking for our consent. We did not give our consent. The NCAA totally blindsided us as female athletes and put someone of the opposite sex in an area of undressing. It felt like, of course, it's awkward and it's embarrassing and it's uncomfortable. I mean, a locker room of the same sex, it's uncomfortable, right? But to add a man into that mix, it felt like betrayal, belittlement. It felt, I think the best word to really describe it is traumatic. That experience is something that you just can't shake. A year ago, 2 years ago, a man walks into a woman's locker room and a DA would walk in and immediately arrest them. And they're charged with indecent exposure, sexual harassment, voyeurism, and I'm sure a slew of other things. But now not only was it just happening, it was as if it was being celebrated. It was being encouraged. Leah Thomas was nominated for NCAA Woman of the Year. It just kept going, the accolades and the celebration of this movement. That's why I keep going to the part about denying objective truth, because it's a lot bigger than just women's sports. It's a lot scarier than that. There's a lot more at stake here than just our opportunities and our safety and our privacy and our sports. I mean, it's really systemically, it's the erasure of women.
What are your feelings? What would you say to, I don't know, ESPN awarding Leah Thomas, whatever it was? Was it Woman Sportsman of the Year, Woman of the Year, Women Athlete of the Year? As you pointed out, what's your point of view? What do you say to the NCAA?
I think this message, they know exactly how I mean, in the NCAA and ESPN, these are, of course, organizations and companies that know about sports. So for the NCAA and for ESPN, ESPN nominated or honored Leah Thomas during Women's History Month as this brave, courageous woman. They know better. They know the difference between men and women because they cover men and women's sports. That's essentially like saying LeBron James could compete in the WNBA. They know how unfair that is. They know how wrong it is. Same with the NCAA. Even Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA himself, after doubling down on his stance publicly, privately, he tells me, you know, I support you. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep fighting. It shows these people have no backbone. They are cowards. They are spineless. They lack authenticity. They lack leadership. And it is evident.
That is such a fascinating statement. So is it your estimation, and I'd love for you to speak to a larger audience as well, like, you already talked about the swimming community. And look, you know, Riley, I don't know how much you know about me, but I spent years at ESPN, and I talked about a whole host of controversial topics, at least controversially within the walls of ESPN. And I've said before, I really enjoyed my time at ESPN and love a lot of people there. But I think it wasn't that my opinion was a complete man on an island. I wasn't an outlier. It's just that everyone else who agreed with me on issues was quiet about it. I think that's also true for most corporations. I'm not sure they're dyed-in-the-wool believers. They're just doing, they're just pursuing the path of least resistance. When you
they're
look
not.
At your fellow athletes, were there true believers? Like, were there true believers in the locker room saying to you, come on, Riley, it's just male genitalia, get over it? Or, come on, Riley, he's a woman? Or is it more they were just like, let's all just go along to get along. This is the way that you don't get canceled.
The latter. I didn't have one person say to me, try to rationalize the position we were in. Yet I have parents, female athletes, all the time reach out to me. And from my conversations that I had at that swim meet, the overwhelming majority, 99% of us there, speaking for my team at the University of Kentucky, where I was team captain, of the 40 girls on my team, 38 of us feel the exact same way. And that's the way I'm speaking to you. In regards to the athletic directors, the NCAA, I was also nominated for NCAA Woman of the Year, and they had this big convention where they were naming their Woman of the Year. And so I went to this convention, and they also had a big area where you could buy a booth inside this convention and pass out pamphlets or whatever. Corporations could buy a booth. And so I applied to buy a booth, to which when I applied with my name, I was denied because I had been outspoken at this point, and the NCAA didn't want me having a booth. I tried again, denied. I came up with an alias, and they were like, of course, we'll take your money. Got a booth inside this convention center where I passed out pamphlets explaining Title IX, the importance of Title IX, and bracelets and different things. And every single athletic director who walked by, every single one of them said, hey, keep doing what you're doing. And after the first 60, I felt so humbled. I was like, this is awesome. And then as it continued, it got frustrating. If every single one is agreeing with me, including the president, Mark Emmert, then why are we going along with this facade? Why are we catering to the minority if we're all on the same page here? And that's something I still can't figure out. I mean, I can figure it out, but right. I don't understand how we've gotten here.
We're going to step aside here for a moment. Stay tuned.
Not to compare myself to you, I love the fight that you've taken on, but that's been my experience as well. It's humbling, and you're flattered at first with the compliments and the encouragement, and then you get frustrated, like, why aren't you joining me? Why are you quiet? And that stat you gave is fascinating. Out of 40 teammates, 38 agreed with your approach to trans athletes. I'm going to assume, because by the way, most of us think that this has been an increasingly acceptable phenomena with younger, people in America.
Right.
And I would assume younger athletes as well. But so two were believers, but 38 saw it as an injustice.
And the two girls who were believers are dating each other. So...
okay.
Just as a...
I don't even know what to do with that.
But, right. Just as a... yeah. Just so you can kind of gather what I'm putting down here. Not that that's an indicator of anything, but I think it's... yeah.
I don't know if it is. To be honest, these acronyms have been grouped together, LGBTQ, and I don't think it's an easy grouping. I don't think it belongs together. I don't think to be gay means to accept that men can be women. So I don't know. I don't know anymore who's fighting for what and why.
I don't either. I've had so many people within the LGBTQ community, specifically the LGB, who are so frustrated because they feel as if this movement, this fight, is setting them backwards because this new wave is unhinged. They don't want equal rights. They want to take away others' rights. They don't want to fight for their rights like we saw in the 2000s within the gay community. They fought for their rights. This community, they don't want to fight, they want to take.
So on that note, then, while you found this quiet acceptance within the swimming community and the athletic community at large, you mentioned a moment ago what you experienced in San Francisco is something else. And you have taken on this public persona. You dove straight into one of the most controversial issues of our time. And you are met quick and head first with this kind of response, which was violent, which was threatening, which was aggressive. You know, you had to be separated into a room. What happened? They barricaded you in that room, in essence, and held you for how long was it, Riley? I mean, tell me how that felt. Tell me that story.
I gave my speech at San Francisco, which I thought I knew what I was getting myself into by going to San Francisco. I knew what the environment would be like there. But I was naive to think they would come with more of an open mind, I guess. They did not come with an open mind. I delivered my speech. It was only after my speech when protesters entered into the room, ambushed the front. They turned the lights off. They rushed to the front. They assaulted myself and others at the front of the room who were a part of Turning Point Chapter. I was escorted out of the room by an officer, to which we were only met with more protesters in the hallway. And that's when I was ultimately barricaded in this room for 3+ hours. I missed my flight home. They were yelling awful, hateful, vengeful, terrible things at both the officers and myself for the 3 hours I was in that room. They were yelling things such as, you know, let her out and let us handle her. Or they were telling the officers, you know, you're only protecting her because she's white. Or they would say things such as, which I find this so ironic, they kept using the verbiage, we fight back. And it struck me because the day before this incident at the beginning of April, the press secretary of the Biden administration, Jean-Pierre, in a press conference, she these are her words. She said, you know, our trans community, they're resilient and they fight back. And I couldn't shake it. You know, they were both saying we fight back, which shows this is coming from the top. This is trickling down. And we're allowing it. We're actively letting ourselves decline as a society. I was in Texas testifying 2 days ago. They had to clear the Capitol building because of how unhinged these protesters got when talking about gender modification for children. The protesters, I mean, it was something like I'd never seen before. The rise in violence, the rise in just utter madness is something I never thought we would see. I thought we had better systems in place to prevent this, where people would, they would face consequences if they dealt with things this way, but we've gotten to a point where they're not facing consequences. It's celebrated.
All right, two more questions for you. And then there's the professor that you have the interaction with, which you did an amazing job with, by the way. But, you know, it just, as much as normal people are coming up to you and saying, hey, thank you, it's just, it's, maybe we've just come to the understanding that academia is not a sign of intelligence. But
no.
The professor, you asked the professor a simple question. Can you tell the gender difference between a skeleton you've dug up from hundreds of years ago? And he says, no, it's impossible. You know, I don't know. Something
not
to
only
that
was
extent.
This a professor, this was a professor of anthropology, which is essentially the study of human civilization. So he had taken archaeology courses. He was qualified in this area, yet again, chose to lie. We know there are differences between men and women's skeletons, whether that be from our skull, our jaw, our knee joints, of course, our pelvis. There are so many indicators of a man's skeleton versus a woman's. Yet he chose to lie, and that's what we keep going back to. And I think really a lot of this is deeply rooted in Marxism. The way we are denying objective truth, the way we are trying to break down faith and family and freedoms, and the way we're changing our language that we use, the way we're silencing a lot of this, it really is. You can open a history book and see, and we see how that turns out for cultures when you rely on this Marxism. But that's, again, that's the direction that we prove to be going.
Riley, what was your major at Kentucky?
I majored in human health sciences and health law.
First of all, I asked that question because, look, you don't need compliments. You're probably getting plenty, and they all sound gratuitous at some point. But you are incredibly, you have a level of wisdom that is uncommon for your age. And I consider wisdom a higher compliment than intelligence, which you have that as well. And it's pretty impressive, Riley. And so you sound like somebody who studied history, philosophy, or law in the way that you're framing your points of view. And I'm very impressed. Are you swimming? Are you done swimming? Are you going to continue? Where are you in your swimming career?
This is hard because when you compete your whole life for something, especially at such a high level, and it ends, that's pretty hard to deal with. And so I pretty quickly got into triathlons, and now running. I just ran the Nashville Marathon, so different things there, but competing, winning, there's nothing better than winning. So I can't seem to shake doing something that would allow that. So,
well, I'm glad to hear that. And that was where I was going to end it. At least your skin doesn't smell like chlorine anymore, and your hair's
totally
going back to normal, right?
Hair, it's recovering. My skin isn't as dry, and I don't smell like chlorine. So really, it's all a blessing.
All right, Riley, I've really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you for spending some time with us today.
Of course. Thank you.
There you go. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Riley Gaines. As I said, the modern face of feminism. I'll see you again next time. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcast and Amazon Prime members. You can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
I'm Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, I'm joined by founder and executive director of Power the Future, Daniel Turner, for a look at how we can advocate for a cleaner earth while strengthening U.S. energy independence. Available now on FoxNewsPodcast.com.